With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Billboard on Broadway podcast. I'm Rebecca Milzoff, your host, senior editor, and musical theater maven at Billboard. So I have to admit, when I first heard that A Bronx Tale was being turned into a musical, I was skeptical. For those of you who haven't heard of A Bronx Tale, this is essentially a monologue that the actor Chaz Palminteri wrote for himself. You might know him from The Usual Suspects, Bullets Over Broadway, many, many movies. But this is a sort of semi-autobiographical story about him growing up in the Belmont section of the Bronx. When I heard about A Bronx Tale, the musical, there is this huge creative team involved that sort of intrigued me. There's a good deal of crossover, actually, between the pop and theater worlds. Among the people assembled for this musical, the lead producer is Tommy Mottola, the former Sony Music head who is actually producing on Broadway for the first time. Alan Menken, who I feel needs no introduction, but I'll give him one anyway. He has written so many Disney hits, I've honestly lost track. He wrote the music. Robert De Niro, who is also, strangely, a first-timer on Broadway as a director, is co-directing. And his co-director is a real Broadway veteran, Jerry Zaks, who also happens to be heading up this little show that's about to open, Hello Dolly, with Bette Midler. So that's a lot of kind of big-time cooks in the kitchen when it comes to putting a show together. And it got me thinking, it's a lot like when an artist is putting together an album with a bunch of mega producers and writers. When you have this many hugely accomplished people on a creative team, it doesn't always turn out so well or make for a coherent album or, in this case, show in the end. But when the subject matter really has heart and the story is compelling, as is definitely the case here with A Bronx Tale, this is a really personal story for Palminteri, it can all come together. And that's what happens with this show. Anyone who likes the sort of vintage-y 50s, 60s street corner pop sound is going to totally recognize it in Alan Menken's music. In fact, if you were a big fan of his show Little Shop of Horrors, you might hear a little bit of that kind of influence in there. The cast is stocked with a bunch of really accomplished Broadway performers. And I have to say, I saw the show a while ago. The audience loves it. I was pretty much as taken with what was happening on stage as what was happening off. The audience really feels palpably into what's going on. You get the sense that there are a lot of people coming to see it for whom this really was their growing up story, whether it was in the Bronx or elsewhere. So I talked about all that recently with a few members of the cast, Bobby Conti Thornton, who's making his Broadway debut as Calogero, the main character, Nick Cordero, who plays the sort of alluring neighborhood mobster Sonny, and Ariana DeBose, who some of you who are huge Hamilton fans might recognize her name from the original cast. She plays Calogero's first love, Jane, and with Alan Menken himself.
And this girl could be one of the great ones. This one could be One of the ones on who you bet. Do you fly off the rails with the wind in your sails whenever she sends you a glance?
So we're sitting here with the cast of A Bronx Tale and composer Ellen Menken. Very happy to have all of you here.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
Why don't you go around and introduce yourselves?
My name's Nick Cordero. I play the role of Sonny.
I'm Ariana DeBose, and I play the role of Jane.
I'm Bobby Conti Thornton, and I play Calodro.
I'm Alan Menken, and I play composer.
The most difficult role of all. the show is great. I saw it a while ago. And I'm fascinated by how this is a show that over many years has had many lives, but it started as a monologue, and the idea of a monologue becoming a big Broadway musical with singing and dancing is not one that would perhaps be natural. So starting with you, Alan, as a composer, what convinced you that this was a story that could sing and dance?
Chaz Palminteri.
He's a very convincing man.
Very convincing, yeah. He doesn't rest.
Chaz has been wanting this for about 15 years. I scored a movie that he directed called Noel, and he said, I think I want to do A Bronx Tale. I think it would be a great musical. And I was interested, but I couldn't figure out what vocabulary I would do it in. I don't know. It was when Tommy Mottola then called me and said...
Two very convincing men, yeah. I would think. Yeah.
Then Robert De Niro called me and said, you're doing it. No, no, and said, I think it's the music of the neighborhood. And I go, oh, okay, I get it. Once I figured out what the vocabulary would be, then I had to weigh in, you know, as far as the score. And then it was really one of the biggest challenges is how much do we have the sort of the voice of Chaz Palminteri in this, like in the one-man show, because it is a memory play to a degree. Mm-hmm. But that's where a lot of the development came is how to, you know, make that translation.
And I have two questions. One is Chaz secretly a huge Broadway musical fan?
I think so.
Or not so secretly?
I mean, sort of not so secretly. He has so much respect for so many shows and the different genres they embody and the way that they bring, you know, life to timeless stories. You know, he constantly talks about West Side Story and Guys and Dolls and how some of those themes are echoed in our show. And I don't think he would have believed that A Bronx Tale would make a great Broadway musical had he not been exposed to timeless musicals or be a fan of them. You know what I'm saying?
He's also a musical guy. He was in bands growing up. I think he's mm-hmm. written a few songs. He had some sort of, you know, some early traction in the Billboard charts. Billboard offices.
Okay, I have to look into that.
But also the one-man show, when I first saw it, it struck me how, as a lot of good comedy is it's very musical. You know, when you're doing, absolutely. When you're up there playing all those characters and you have to keep the ball in the air for that amount of time, mm-hmm. it's, you know, there's a pulse to it, and the pauses and the punchlines are all very musical in a way. And he's done this show, you know, on Broadway and all around the world for almost 30 years. So he's a musical guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think what's also actually maybe more of a surprise is that Robert De Niro is a fan of musicals.
Yeah.
Yeah. He is.
Oh, yeah.
He is.
He's produced a lot. He was one of the lead producers in We'll Rock You, the Queen musical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, work.
Mm-hmm.
Work indeed.
Go Bob!
And Alan, in terms of finding the vocabulary for this, it's hard not to hear some sort of Little Shop of Horrors-esque, you know, street corner 50s pop in this. Was that a sort of touchstone for you at all? Or?
It was fun to come back to that world. This is so different from Little Shop as far as the tone. I mean, this is... Yeah. Little Shop was using all of that extremely tongue-in-cheek as a wink at horror movies, and this is the music of the neighborhood. So, but it was really fun to come. I love working in pastiche. As anyone who knows my work knows, I love working in styles.
Yeah.
I love a good pastiche.
Right.
And the three of you come to this project from very different backgrounds. Nick has had some really wonderful roles on Broadway recently, most recently in Waitress. Bobby, this is your Broadway debut, mm-hmm. and Ariana was most recently hashtag the bullet in Hamilton.
I heard about Bobby. Okay, should I go back all the way to the University of Michigan, the Go Blue connection?
Sure.
Because my daughter went to University of Michigan, and we have the great musical theater, and I kept hearing about Bobby Conti Thornton, and this kid is like a star, and I'd heard about him. Word had traveled about you, my friend.
Wow. Well, thank God it did.
All the way to the hallowed halls of Casa Menken.
The hallowed halls of Broadway.
I also have halls of Menken, is that what you said?
Casa Menken.
I also have to say, Bobby, as a credit to you and your stage presence, that I expected you and Nick to be roughly the same size in person. And you're a tall man, but not quite as imposing a presence as Nick.
It's very rare for me not to be the tallest person in the room, so it's awesome.
Happy to be of service.
I know
how you feel about over that.
Of course. Well, you know, and Chaz is 6'3", 6'4". Mm-hmm. So it's that sort of presence that you got to embody on stage, not only physically, but sort of energetically.
Completely.
And
Well, you have a very eerie Palminteri-esque vibe on stage. Like, your posture is very similar.
Well, something that helped that was Chaz's dad in real life, on top of being his city job as a bus driver, was also a boxing trainer. Mm-hmm. And so I started boxing for this job, and it totally instantly affected my posture, how I stand, what your sort of spatial awareness is to your other actors and the other characters around you, mm-hmm. and also just sort of the mental aspect of boxing. Once the technique is ingrained, it just becomes about what your other is giving you, to how to avoid and how to counteract. Mm-hmm. And if you just sort of infuse that into every aspect of the performance, that was very much an inspiration of Chaz.
Mm-hmm.
And when Raging Bull, Robert De Niro, was telling you how to tip on boxing too, that helps as well.
Yeah, I guess you listen. Did Chaz talk to you all a lot about, you know, his own personal story and any fun tidbits that informed your characters?
Yeah, not so much instructional, but he loves telling stories. He's got so many of them. So he would tell stories about, like, you know, there's characters in our show called Tony 10-2 and Frankie Coffee Cake. And
with LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And what these guys would do and how they would operate in real life, and it's not PG, you know, so he's a great regaler of tales from the neighborhood, and it really adds to the flavor of what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Before we go too far, I do have to say that the real hands-on director of this, who really shaped this, was Jerry Zaks,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who I worked with before on Sister Act, and does amazing work with actors.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
I don't want to go too far.
Absolutely.
And, you know, tying both of those things together, I, being a newcomer along with Bobby to the Broadway production of this show, I did talk with Chaz here and there about Jane, his experience of her. But the reality of the situation is he hasn't seen or heard from her since that time.
Hmm.
And I was brought onto the team to bring something a little different. You don't see the traditional hairstyle that Jane wears in the movie on me in the Broadway show.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm dancing. I'm mm-hmm. bringing a completely different feel to her in that way as well. And Jerry helped me figure out all the ways that I could be effective with paying tribute to who Jane was and also making her the all-American girl of today as well.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause our show holds up a mirror as well as being a memory play. It is a mirror to society about, you know, how far we have come and where we don't want to go back to. So I owe a lot to Jerry in that way for helping me figure all of that out.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's someone who knows what he's doing for sure. Right? I have to say that personally, I am a great fan of the music of this era. I grew up with my dad playing Dion and the Belmonts for me. Yeah. And I like, so yes, I am an old man in a woman's body. But were you all familiar with sort of this 50s pop like milieu?
Oh,
or,
absolutely.
Or did you have to like familiarize yourselves?
Well, I grew up with it. It was played in my household as a child, and I also was in Motown the Musical on Broadway, so I'm very well versed in all of this. I was Mary Wilson of the Supremes, and I covered Diana Ross, so you know, bringing that flavor to this has been really fun too.
There's a little Diana flair.
She's totally giving you a little bit of Diana.
And what about for you guys?
You know, all I heard in my grandparents' house growing my all Italian grandparents' house growing up was
no grandparents now.
Was Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin
these
the classics.
What did you think I was gonna say?
Damn the Belmonts.
So it was very easy to tap into that sort of style, and it's you know, especially hearing how much of a fan Chaz is of Diana and the Belmonts. He was trying to write a screenplay about their lives, which is actually very fascinating and interesting.
I think he should do that.
Like that story would be so fascinating. Yeah. And going back to your initial question, like with that, how that music is infused, is that I've never played a real life person before, mm-hmm. and especially someone that's in the room every day that you can not only garner their stories from, but also just simply study on a mm-hmm. daily basis, mm-hmm. And seeing how when Alan's music is played in the room, how it infuses him very visibly in a joyous way was a wonderful thing to see, and how that you can then impart that.
He seems a joyous man from the little time I've known him.
He's infused with joy.
Infused with joy.
Infused.
Hallelujah. I suppose. I don't recall it being played around my house, but I grew up singing dinner theater as a teenager, and was exposed to all kinds of different, you know, we did war shows, we did 50 shows, we did rock and roll shows, so mm-hmm. yeah, it's in there somewhere. But the songs are just great, you know what I mean? The songs mm-hmm. and the melodies are just, you couldn't imagine them any other way, and they fit the characters so well, so it's really easy to put it on. You know?
It was a fun score to write.
Yeah,
really,
mm-hmm. You can tell that you had fun at doing it.
I can imagine. I mean, when you sign on for a show and find out Alan Menken is doing the music, like, what is your reaction?
You just get there, you run. Yeah. You run, don't walk.
You run, don't walk. It took me about 2 seconds to say yes.
Direction? No.
No!
What? I increasingly feel like you need your own variety show, Alan.
Yes.
Or a podcast. Alan's just quick.
We're just
going to
leave and leave you with the...
Neurotic, it's called.
I enjoy that.
Fine.
And it's, I mean... For both you as a composer and you as actors to be in the room together working on the music live, and I mean, it's always exciting when there's a living composer working on a show, but yeah. I can only yeah. imagine like what the collaboration is like.
Well, I backed off.
Yeah.
Because, they should make it their own. And frankly, the songs speak for themselves. Plus, I had a great music team, I gotta say. I met this guy, Ron Melrose,
incredible.
Wonderful musical director.
Yeah.
And, so I had the luxury of backing off. My greatest thrill was, you know, sitting in my studio and there's, you know, Glenn next to me, you know, biting his hand. And there's Chaz going through some sort of crisis. And there's Tommy even in the room, usually insulting me in some wonderful way. No, but I had the best time working with the team of people on this. I really did, and it was a high bar. Also, Tommy really, Tommy Mottola was very involved in terms of, you know, being the sort of the barometer for, is that authentic? And Chaz, of course, in terms of the language, hugely. Mm-hmm. But it was great.
I was going to say, because this is the old neighborhood for Tommy too, right? That mm-hmm. he kind of grew up with.
Well, he's actually sort of more, he's there. But then he grew also in New Rochelle. Mm-hmm. I grew up in New Rochelle. Tommy actually lived in New Rochelle, but the other side, the Italian side of the tracks.
what was his involvement like? I mean, it's interesting to know this is his first time being a Broadway producer.
He was my first point of contact with the project. Mm-hmm. He tapped me on the shoulder at the Tonys in 2014 and told me about the project and said that they were mm-hmm. looking at me for the role of Sonny and that they'd be in touch. And I like to say that immediately after that happened, the lights went down and I lost the Tony, it being the first category, but I gained a job. So like, I lost the Tony and gained my next job in the first 10 minutes.
That's fantastic. That's right. I had actually auditioned for something else that Tommy has been working on, and he called my people and asked if I would be interested in talking about Jane for Bronx Tale. So he sort of found me. I'm very grateful to him, by the way.
And you know, Tommy just gave me, as did Alan and these extraordinary team, just gave me the opportunity of a lifetime to lead a Broadway show at 24. and it's nothing but support. And everyone's incredibly insightful from very different perspectives. I don't think that's something many Broadway shows have. Mm-hmm. But it's all unified around this story and the legacy of the story, which is now almost 30 years. And that's a real testament to how much we love the material and how universal the material is and how malleable it can be to any sort of form of storytelling. And mm-hmm. musical theater is a very viable form of storytelling to tell this story.
Yes. Musical theater.
Yeah.
I have to say that I'm always interested in like what audience reactions are like live, and I very much believe that the theater does not have to be a quiet, polite place during a show if people are having emotional reactions. And people have emotional reactions to the show. There, yeah. I mean, you hear people reacting to what's going on stage and laughing and sometimes talking back to the characters in a way that you don't often see.
We got some gasps.
Yes. Yep. I'll play the role of Chaz Palminteri right now and say what he likes to say in every interview, which is that Alfred Hitchcock
yep.
likes to say that the best thing you can do to an audience is either scare them, make them laugh, or make them cry. And in Bronx Tale, you get all three. Mm-hmm. And so it's a great way to sort of tap into people's tear ducts is when you have them laughing about something that's true and then taking a slight spin on it, and then all of a sudden they're crying and they don't know why. It's a very three-pronged effort.
And I very much got the sense too that there are a lot of people coming to see this show for whom this was their lives, you right. know, and they see a lot of themselves yeah. in the story.
Wednesday matinees seem to be almost every week the swarm of people from that neighborhood that are so willing and giving to just delve in with us because they say, this is my story. I know the four shops that are on that set.
And that's an emotional experience for people to come and see themselves represented on a Broadway stage that doesn't happen every day, and they don't take it lightly.
That's right. And it's a responsibility and are then to not screw that up Absolutely. Because these are this is their story.
Yeah.
Wow. I hope there's a big neighborhood.
I mean, the Bronx is
a lot of expats. Bronx don't all live there now.
If the Bronx is 57 square miles, and we're
they
talking
won't
about
be too much trouble.
I'm talking about. I think of the Bronx as a neighborhood, but it's a very big neighborhood.
It is. But
yeah, it's my own parents' neighborhood. They're both from the Bronx, so
Indeed, yeah.
I relate as well. Cool. Well, thank you so much for coming, you guys.
Thanks. Pleasure.
Thank you. Good luck with the show.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Now that you're here, well, it's clearer than day that those words, they're not true.
No, no.
Not for me.
Not me.
Not for you. Cause in a world like this, where so much can keep us apart.
Thanks again for listening to Billboard on Broadway. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to us on iTunes and Acast. Please give us many stars in ratings and feel free to leave comments. And please come back next week for a new podcast. Blah, 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 blah.